Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace. It's November 7, 2012, and this is episode 354. Today, I have a bunch of images to talk about from my recent trip around the world. As I leave for Antarctica tomorrow, though, and I only have a few hours left to do this, I figured I'd just throw all of the images into a blog post and then talk you through them without my usual manuscript. To view those images, go to mbp.ac/354 for this episode, and there'll basically be a bunch of images in a gallery, thumbnails, and if you click on one of them, any of the thumbnails, then you'll see the image full screen almost, depending on the size of your screen, of course. But I've loaded pretty big images, and then once you've got the image open, you can just go back and forth with your arrow keys on your keyboard, or click left and right with your mouse, and you can go through the images like that. Before we jump into that, though, I'd like to mention that this episode is brought to you by the new Squarespace. Squarespace.com introduced a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. With professional designs and website templates optimized for any size, smartphone, tablet, or computer. For a free trial and 10% off new accounts, go to squarespace.com/MBP and use the code MBP11. So when I first went over to the US, I think I left home in Japan on the 5th of September. I initially went to stay with my uncle and aunt and some cousins in Fairfield, Ohio. That was great. We had not been to their house yet. They live in three different places, but it was really nice to see them. My cousins I haven't really seen since I was a kid. And although my uncle and aunt have been back to England a couple of times over the last 30 years or so, it was really nice to spend some quality time with all of them. And while I was down there, you'll remember a few episodes ago, it was a couple of months ago now, I visited the guys over at Outdoor Photo Gear. So another quick thank you to Chris and the team over there. I had a great time and it was really, really nice to see you all. I then, after about 5 days, I think it was, I went over to New York and I was there for the Photo Shelter Luminance 2012 seminar and workshop. And this was amazing. It was like the first half day was basically four workshops that I attended. There was a series of workshops going on, but I got to attend Joe McNally's and Zach Arias's workshops. Got to meet Zach. He's amazing. And the following 2 days after that was just like full on 30 minute TED style talks, every 30 minutes, all through the day for 2 days. And it was really, you know, the people that spoke were amazing. I'm not going to go into details on this at the moment, but you can. The Photo Shelter are starting to release videos of each of these sessions, which is really incredible. So go over and take a look at that on Photo Shelter, because the people that were speaking were like industry leaders, and it was just so educational and inspirational. And of course, I met lots of great people in the breaks as well. So thanks to Photo Shelter for inviting me over there, and I just really had a great time. In the meantime, though, obviously I was walking around, I was doing things in the city, meeting other people, but I was all throughout, I was trying to grab photographs wherever I could. And the first one that I wanted to look at today of this 26 is just one that I caught, that the evening light was catching the buildings, and you have these amazing steel external staircases in New York, like the fire escapes. And I grabbed one shot where the warm evening light was catching the building. The building was reflecting in a high rise that was over to its right. And this is just, to me, one of those beautiful New York architecture shots that, the shot itself, whether it's beautiful or not, that's for you to decide. The architecture is just amazing out there. And it was nice to just be able to grab images as I was walking around the town or the city. And I really just fell in love with New York. I would be back in a couple of weeks, though. This was my first trip. And after that, I went over to San Francisco to do the first of the Pixels to Pigment workshops in America. And this shot is just, Jack Andres was great. You might remember Jack. He interviewed me on this podcast a while back, and he is or was the CEO of WebSpy, a company that used to sponsor us. And Jack was great. He came and picked me up from the airport. I stayed with him for the majority of the week, and it was just, I had a great time. So thanks so much for that again, Jack. And he was gracefully waiting for me in his car as I stood at the top of one of the hills, literally looking down on the streets of San Francisco. And this is the shot. I just waited for a few things to come together, and it's all pretty small elements, but there's people walking across the road, there's people getting in a car, and then very sort of America, San Francisco, there's a guy just sort of coasting past on his skateboard. And then you've got the hills with that mist rolling over there that's so prevalent in San Francisco. But it just seemed so real, you know, standing at the top of this hill, looking down across the city. And I recalled, and I posted on Google Plus about this as well, but, you know, I used to watch The Streets of San Francisco, the series with Carl Malden and Michael Douglas when I was a kid. And I never really dreamt that I would ever get to San Francisco and stand there looking out across the city like this, let alone be there in you know, such a great way with the tour and having all of, you know, my camera gear with me to capture things. It felt a little bit like a dream come true in some ways. And then later that evening, it was like another dream come true, in that when I was a kid, my brother, when he'd left for the army, I think I was like 8 years old when he joined the army in the UK. And he, on one of his earliest trips, he bought me a silk wallet that was basically, it had the Golden Gate Bridge it was probably dyed into it. I doubt it was woven, but it may have been. It was a beautiful silk wallet that I used for a number of years as a kid. And I just, again, I looked at this and I used to dream that one day I'd be able to go over and stand there and look at the Golden Gate Bridge with my own eyes. And then thanks to Jack, here I was on the edge of a cliff, basically on the top of a cliff, looking out across the misty harbour and the bridge there and its beautiful orange colours. So I, obviously here I did a long exposure. I did a number of them. And this is the last one of a series that I did where there's a boat that had just, a speedboat I think it was, that had sailed across. Probably not a speedboat. It was going relatively fast enough to cause a wake. And that just sort of added an extra element of interest, I thought. So I selected this one, which is the last of the batch. But it was just, again, amazing to be standing there. One thing to note is that I was surprised how cold it is. I'd read on the way out there that San Francisco was a pretty cold place. But you can really feel the chill coming up from the ocean, from the ocean currents apparently come down from the Pacific. Basically, the warm currents go up past Japan and warm me up on one side of the Pacific, and then they go up to the Arctic and down past Alaska and really pick up all of the cold. And then as the water comes back down to San Francisco, it's still very, very cold. So as you approach the cliffs, you can really feel the cool air coming up from the sea. So I was surprised at how cold it actually was there, even in September. After the Pixels to Pigment workshop, though, on the Monday, Jack again took me out in his car and we drove along the coast. And it was midday, the light wasn't great, but we stopped at a couple of places. And here's a black and white shot of Pigeon Point, the lighthouse at Pigeon Point. And this really wasn't working for me in colour, but as is often the case with the long exposures that I do, a lot of the time I shoot them with an eye for making a black and white anyway. And this turned out better than I thought in black and white. So with the flowing water all registering smoothly. And you can really kill a lot of the fact that it was very harsh sunlight at this point. And so this is kind of becoming one of my favourites from the trip. A few days later, we arranged to go photographing over at the Sutro Baths on the coast. And I was able to meet Doug Kay. Hi, Doug. You probably know Doug from the TWIP episodes that we've been on together. And also Forrest Tanaka, who's, you know, very active in the Martin Bailey photography community, but also does his own great video podcasts. And, you know, it was really, really nice to meet Forrest in person. And then that night we went for dinner with Frederick Van Johnson as well from TWIP, obviously. So that was great. Lots of good memories being made there. But on that afternoon, we climbed up on this rock on the beach, and basically I was trying to get some photographs of the pelicans. I love pelicans. I remember years ago in Florida, it was a Friday afternoon. We were pretty much finishing work and just sitting there having a few beers on the beach, and this brown pelican just sailed past, basically, and I've always wanted to try and get some shots since. And I still don't have any really good ones. I've been trying a lot while I've been in America. But because I hadn't been traveling with my really long lenses, this shot is probably one of the best that I like, where the pelicans are only a small part of the entire scene, but there's this big guano-covered rocks with the cormorants, who are responsible for the guano, obviously. But there's three pelicans just flying overhead. And if you look in there, there's cormorants looking up at the bigger pelicans, and a few things going off that kind of make it interesting to me, and so I'm quite liking this shot as well. And then to the left of that, those rocks that we're just looking at, there's this couple of other rocks and smaller boulders in the sea, so I did a long exposure of that as well, and kind of positioned myself so you got a bit of a reflection of the two rocks. And again, you know, the top of these rocks is just totally covered in cormorant crap. So, it's not the best scene to be photographing. But, you know, if you ignore that, or you can get past that, I still quite like this as well. And then a couple of days after that was the day that I borrowed one of Jack's cars. Thanks again, Jack. And I drove down to San Luis Obispo to meet with the Really Right Stuff guys, where I the other podcast that I released while I was down there was a pretty bad audio quality, but it was an interview with Joe Johnson Jr. And so that was great to meet those guys. I actually met Joe Sr. in the afternoon. We went to lunch together, and he was just such a really, really nice person, and his love for the engineering that they do, both of them, everyone in there, they all just really, really love what they're doing, and it shows in their products. Really Right Stuff. They sort of. I almost want to feel as though they complete me as a photographer. They're just so cool at what they do. But on the way back, I drove along Route 1 along the coast, and this is one shot that I got that I was relatively happy with, and it's just a few promontories that are sort of sticking out, rock, like outcrops of rock into the sea, and then some boulders. Again, a slow exposure, a long exposure. But although you could hardly see the detail in reality because of the mist and the haze, when I did a black and white version of this, the hills in the background kind of popped out a little bit as well. So it gives it an extra dimension in there. So you've got all of these layers of clarity. And I kept driving. I didn't have a lot of time because I spent a couple of hours longer with the Really Right Stuff guys than I expected. And so I ended up driving along Route 1, and I saw another couple of places that I really thought I should stop, but I was also conscious that I only had about another 20 minutes or so until the sun would hit the horizon. And I kept going, and I made one of those stupid mistakes that you often do, or that I often do, in that I thought, you know what, that looks like a great place. I'll come back if I don't find anything better. And then there was nowhere to do a U-turn, and I ended up missing probably the best opportunity of the day. So you live and learn, as they say. Before we run on and look at the rest of the images, though, I did want to bring you a message from our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace is now faster and easier than ever before to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. Squarespace gives you everything that you need to create and maintain a professional-looking website, from domains, design, development, hosting, and support. Squarespace has professionally designed templates with hundreds of customization options and over 300 fonts. The system is 100% drag and drop, making it easy to customize your website. A new page builder tool called the Layout Engine enables you to customize pages in seconds by adding blocks of content such as photos, videos, text, and social media content, then immediately preview the layout as you go. Squarespace's templates are mobile responsive, which means your site automatically restructures to look great on any size smartphone, tablet, or computer. So when you add an image to your site, 7 different versions are created so as to the correct size is available for the various devices. Their iPhone, iPad, and Android apps also make it easy to update your site on the go, review analytics, or monitor blog comments. What's really great about Squarespace is that it includes excellent social media integration. You can automatically import, sync, and publish to and from social media with a few clicks, which allows for dynamic refreshing of your site content from your social media postings. For example, you can automatically pull photos from Instagram into your site, instantly sync pages and galleries to Facebook, or auto-publish new blog entries to Twitter. You can easily add social media buttons to connect with all of the services that you love. Squarespace is built on a cloud architecture for site speed and stability, and Squarespace uses the latest web technologies, HTML5, CSS3, JavaScript, and JSON, for speed and flexibility. And Squarespace, their support team will basically, they're online ready for you to email 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and there are live online workshops for all level experience. For a free all-inclusive trial, go to squarespace.com and sign up for a free account. No credit card is needed, just try it out and start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code MBP11 and you'll get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That means 10% off the first month or 10% off the first year, which of course is an even better deal. So that's squarespace.com/MBP and use the offer code MBP11. Next, on my long journey home though, it was over to New York. And after the workshop weekend, after the weekend, I met up with an old friend, Ron Cuniff. But then after, he joined the workshop. And then after the weekend, we went out one evening and we went over to a place, Dumbo, where you can look back across the city. And I wanted to shoot a skyline of Manhattan. But Scott Kadzinoff was kind enough to let me know where it was possible to do this. And we met up with Scott and Ron and we had dinner again, which was great. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Ron. But while he was there, obviously, one of the things that I did, I went out there to photograph the skyline, but I was pleased to see that you could see the Statue of Liberty out there as well. Although it was quite a long way off, so I had the 2x extender on my 70-200, but this shot is one where I was, I'd got it on a tripod and doing a relatively long exposure. Beautiful red sky, but then there's the lights from a boat that was going across. And although I'd got a couple of straight shots without the boat lights, I kind of like this one best because it's just got those added elements. And it might be a bit of a mess, but it kind of, for me, portrays what the shoot was like. And then I was shooting the Manhattan skyline for a while, but the shot that I decided to use was actually one of a couple of shots that I grabbed after this one. This is actually Manhattan Bridge in the background, And then at the top, kind of framing this shot, is the Brooklyn Bridge. And so, you know, I have the it's a long exposure again, of course, so the water's all smoothed over, but there's the reflection or the shadow of the bridge in the water, and then you've got a bit of the skyline in the background. And it just, you know, the golden colours and everything, it just really, really sums up the feeling of the moment for me. But then this shot is the one that I was there for, and this is basically the Manhattan skyline. In the middle there, I believe, just sort of lurking in the shadows, kind of, is the Empire State Building. But then to the right is the new Freedom Tower that they're building on Ground Zero. And so there's kind of a very solemn feel. It felt strange going to Ground Zero and then looking up at the new development. And it's a very sad sort of environment to be in. But at the same time, there's the hope and the new building and everything. And so I'm kind of glad that I've got this where at the top you can still see the cranes. And so there's construction actually going on. And so I'm kind of glad to have been able to record that part of history as well. And while I was in New York, my MacBook Pro started to show a battery, sort of check the battery or a battery failing error. And so I decided to go to the Apple store on Fifth Avenue. And I got a taxi down there and found that I should have known I needed an appointment to go to the, to see the Genius Bar people. So I basically walked back down and decided to obviously make a bit of a photographic morning of it. And so I was walking along and found all of a sudden to my right, there was the Empire State Building. And so I obviously wanted to grab a few shots. And here's the first one. And it's, you know, It actually, when you're right below the Empire State Building, it doesn't look that impressive because you're looking up at it and it's all compacted and you can't really see it very well. So I was trying to get a little bit away from it, looking over. And of course, you're going to get other buildings in the way there. But I quite like the resulting images. And of the two, I think this one's probably my favorite. I caught it so that there was a little bit of a sparkle of sunlight in there. The only thing I regret is that there was no real wind on this day, and so the flags that were on the front of the building were just sort of flopped down flat. But apart from that, you know, I don't mind this. It's not a bad shot, I don't think. But pretty much anywhere in Manhattan, if you look up, you'll see a scene like this. And this is probably a block or two down from Times Square, and I actually didn't realize until the night that I shot the Manhattan skyline that I was staying about two blocks from Times Square. And I was coming back in a taxi and we drove through it. And I just said, wait, I'll get out here. So I actually had an hour or so I think it was about 11 o'clock at night, and photographed Times Square. I got a few people shots as well, and I'm not going to try and show them today. I've already got too much anyway, but I'll probably throw them onto Google Plus at some point, so do take a look there. But you look up in Manhattan and there's just these big, huge skyscrapers everywhere. And so a 14mm lens can kind of, you know, mush that all up into this sort of falling in on itself architecture shot, which I quite like as well. The next day, I went over to see the people at Photo Shelter, had a nice cup of hot chocolate in a nearby cafe, and got to see the officers, and that was great. So thanks to you guys over at Photo Shelter. But when I'd finished, I decided to jump in a cab and go over to Battery Park, and I got a few shots of the Statue of Liberty again. I was hoping that it was a little bit closer than it was when I shot it from the Brooklyn side a few days before this, but it wasn't that much closer, and we didn't get a fiery sunset like that day either, but I got a shot that I was relatively happy with here. But then it was off to Toronto, and I'd like to thank Michael Durant for, again, coming to pick me up at the airport, and he gave me a quick tour of the city, And because I was hoping to do a photo walk of kinds, he kindly took me over to this place where we could look back at the Toronto skyline. And I wasn't really thinking about it at the time, but, I saw this patch of grass and we could see the skyline there. And there was a bit of colour in the sky. So I just ran over and while Michael waited, quickly grabbed this shot. But this, I quite liked it, a bit of Color Effects Pro to bring out the sky. And I actually darkened the city down a little bit to make it almost a silhouette. But this gave me the idea for the location to do the photo walk. And then the following night went back and there was about 13 people turned out, a great bunch of people. Toronto was amazing and has a very rich photography community as well, a lot more than I was expecting. So a lot of fun there. But this is one of the shots that I got on the following night. So this is a 60-second exposure, obviously with the lights from the city reflecting in the water. And I found it strange that the reflections sort of all go off to one side. The horizon's perfectly straight, but the bottom of the reflections are being pulled over to one side. And I think it's something to do with how the light reflects off the current, because the water's flowing that way. So it's kind of weird how it does that, but ended up being a pretty cool shot. You can see that it was just sort of towards the end of twilight, so there's still light above the clouds, but there's a lot of beautiful light reflected on the city and in the water. Then after the workshop weekend again on the Monday, on the Sunday night, I was able to book a very last minute tour that would take me down to the Niagara Falls. And on the way down there we stopped at a place where we had time, if anyone wanted to jump on a helicopter and go over the falls. So obviously that was something I wasn't going to miss. Actually, I almost did miss because they needed at least two people to make it happen. And there was only me for a while. But then one young lady came over and said, I'll do it. So I'm thinking, yes. Jumped on the helicopter. It was just 9 minutes, including getting out there and coming back. So we didn't get a lot of chance, but I was able to get a couple of shots like this. Looking down on the falls, and in the foreground here we've got the Horseshoe Falls, which are the Canadian Falls, and in the background we have the American Falls, which I'm just going to have to quickly check the name of, because they're called the Bridal Veil. Actually, no, the American Falls are the big ones, and then the Bridal Veil Falls is a little tiny sort of a slightly off to one side falls on the right of the American Falls, which is the ones in the background there that you can see before the bridge. It was nice again to see something iconic, and I wasn't able to, with the small sort of windows, and I've heard that when you shoot from a helicopter, it's best to be able to take the doors off and you can hang out and everything. But so I was kind of pushing my lens out of a slight gap in an open window. And then a couple of times, because the best views seem to be from my side, I sort of pulled my camera back in and let the young lady get her camera out of the window as well. So it wasn't quite as productive as I'd hoped, but it was nice. And, you can see the Lady of the Mist in the water down there. So, it's a good memory shot at least. Shortly after that, we drove into the town, and on my way down to the maid in through the concrete tunnel that goes down to where you get onto the Maid of the Mist boat, I was putting my 5D Mark III back into my bag. I put the camera bag on the floor, put the 5D in there, and went to reach for the 1DX because that was obviously that splash proof, so I wasn't going to have to worry about the waterproofing of the camera in the mist. And then a full Coke bottle, 500 milliliter bottle of Coke, slipped out of my. Because I'd rushed to get in there, I'd actually not zipped my photographer's vest back up, and a Coke bottle slipped out. And at an angle, the cap of the bottle hit smack in the middle of the 5D Mark III's top LCD screen, and that one just cracked. So I spent the 2.5 weeks or so after that in England and on the way back to Japan with a broken 5D. But I've just come back. It's fixed now. It cost me 16,000 yen, which is about, just under $200, about $200 So it wasn't as bad as I thought. But I was insured as well, and I actually got about $210 back from the insurance company. So, and that wasn't me swizzing them. They actually give you a, because for some reason, I don't know the exact reason, but you get like a bonus of 30% anyway. So you end up slightly better off than you were before you before the accident. Wish I'd not done it. It was a real pain working with the camera. It still worked, but I had to use the back LCD panel to check where my settings were and everything, and it just was a bit of a pain, but it could have been worse. And sort of a slight damper on the afternoon, but still I enjoyed it. And this shot is one that I shot from the one of the Maids in the Mist Maids of the Mist boats, and you can see the other boat there heading out to the Horseshoe Falls, or maybe coming back I imagine. But yeah, this was another Color Effects Pro shot, so I've enhanced the clouds a little bit and brought out some of the detail. But when you're in that mist, it's just like it's like you're in a shower. I've got a couple of shots in there, but it's, you know, it's kind of just like wet. And although I was wiping the filter, the front of the, you know, the filter on the front of the lens all the time, it's just like just totally wet. It's like you're standing in a shower photographing upwards. But a couple of good shots, but this one really shows you the place a little bit better. And then it was off to London, and I did the Pixels to Pigment weekend workshop. And then on the Sunday night, I was actually, my wife was going to be flying in on the Monday morning, so I didn't have time to do anything really. I wouldn't have had time the following week. So on the Sunday night after the workshop had finished, I jumped on the tube and went across to Westminster, and I got a couple of nice shots there, you know, that I like. And this first one is of the London Eye and the building to its right. And this is a 30-second exposure. And I was quite surprised to see, didn't notice at first, but that blue building there actually cycles through a number of different colours, greenish colours and things I noticed. And I really just thought it was all really beautiful, the way the colours were there and the reflection. So quite a striking shot. Then from the Westminster Bridge, I was looking back again and at what I consider a kind of like an iconic skyline, with, you know, Big Ben there and the House of Lords. And it was I was doing long exposures again, but trying to sort of time it so that I got the bus, the lights from the double-decker buses doing something interesting in the screen, and I was able to time one where the it was, you know, half look, half trying to do this, but I was able to get the exposure to stop just as the bus was about to leave the frame. And so what you get is it kind of looks like a time machine, where if you reverse this and the bus going into the scene, it's like, you know, one of the, like a warp effect in Star Wars or something. Yeah, the lights just sort of stop in the middle of the, well, over on the left side of the frame. And so I thought that was quite effective. And although I shouldn't really be, but, you know, I was kind of surprised that there were so many people around. Relatively late at night, I think it was around 10-ish at this point. But I started to play around with various compositions, and here I focused on the other side of the Westminster Bridge with the London Eye in the background. But I had the aperture wide open at 2.8, and I just waited for people to walk across. And this one I liked. There's a couple of young girls walking along, maybe a young girl and a young guy, but I think it's two young girls. And they're looking at the back of the camera, you know, and so I like the photography reference here. And I also did some long exposures of Big Ben and the House of Lords down from almost, you know, bank level on the other side of the river. I included enough of the road and Westminster Bridge to give you a bit more reference there as well, and then you've got the streaks of lights, but I really wanted to get the, you know, Big Ben in there and the House of Lords. And something to note that I found while I was photographing this is that the clock face on Big Ben is actually really quite bright. And I think it was about two or three stops blown out when I was doing this. So the shots that I've got of Big Ben, at least this one and the next one, I actually had to bracket and I just masked back in the darker frames face of Big Ben so that it kind of balanced it out. Otherwise, it's so bright and burnt out that blown out that you can't really see the hands on the clock or the pattern and, you know, the numbers and that on the dial. And here is the next shot, just from a different angle with another one of those the street old-fashioned sort of street lamp things there. Then, though, my wife had arrived and we spent a few days sort of, you know, holiday mode with my brother and his wife and then, you know, the rest of my family. But we took a drive to Whitby while I was there. And it's just a really sort of nice town on the east coast of England, just sort of over on the I guess it's the east side of York. And here we have a photo of Whitby Abbey. And this is kind of a ruins, and we got there. I was waiting for the nice light. We did a few other things during the day, and we got up there, and it turns out that they actually closed this place at like 4 o'clock or something. And so what I did was I climbed up onto the edge of the fence, and I extended my tripod down with all four leg sections open so that I could. You know, another good reason for buying a longer tripod, but I was literally hanging over the wall and over the gate while I shot this, and it was fun because we my wife and my brother's wife were there, and they said, "What if someone calls the police?" And my brother's actually a policeman, so he's sitting there helping me to photograph this scene over the wall, and he says, "Well, I'm already here." So we had a bit of fun with the fact that we didn't really need to call the police. They were already helping me to photograph this. But it's a reason, you know, I think I might have gone for a different angle if I could have gone inside. But, you know, under the situations, it's probably the best I could get. And I'm relatively happy with it. It's a minute and a half exposure. And so we've got the streaks of the clouds in the background. And I guess the fact that you can see that the abbey is totally broken in the middle there and obviously all around, but because of this angle, you can't see the front of the abbey so well, but at least from this angle, you can see the fact that the center part is totally broken down. So maybe not all bad. And we actually stayed in Robin Hood Bay, and I got a couple of series of shots for some panoramas, but I haven't had time to do anything with them yet. But on the next day, my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, actually only had 2 days off work. So we had to get back. We couldn't stay any longer. But on the way back, we called in at York. And this is a shot of York Minster. And I'd been trying to get a reasonable shot without people in it. And then, you know, the sky from this point was just beautiful. And I ended up going over to a group of about 7 or 8 people that were standing to the right of that doorway that you can see in the front here. And they were sheltering from the wind because it was quite cold with the wind coming around the building. So they were sheltering in that sort of that inset part. And I ended up walking over to them and saying, "Could I just ask you to move out of the way for just 30 seconds to let me grab a shot?" And they were kind enough to do so. They did say that they'd sue me if she caught a cold, but obviously they were just joking. But yeah, they moved out of the way, so I got a nice clear shot with nobody in front of the building. And again, black and white really accentuates the sky, but brings out all the detail in the stonework, and I'm quite happy with this shot. Then this last shot is actually probably a very not very well-known place at all. It's West Park, and this is basically the park that I grew up on as a kid. I used to live two streets back from one of the entrances to this park. My friend lived on the next street, and it was just like a pretty much a daily ritual on holidays and weekends to just go around, grab my friend, and we'd just walk across the bridge, across the canal bridge into this park. And now my brother actually lives on a road just off the other side, the other end of the park. And so I was in there one day, just gone for a walk basically with my wife. But the sky was beautiful, and so I did, I think it's like 9 or 12 shots that I stitched together. And this, so this is a 102 megapixel panorama of the park. And when you zoom in, you can see the bowling green over on the left. We've got the cricket changing rooms. We've got the chimney from the old mills, and you know, the soccer team coming back from there. It was probably a Sunday because there'd been the people playing football in the park and there. And so over on the right to the right side of the poplar trees, you can see the swings and roundabouts and things. And as you zoom in, there's people playing on them and kids and dads pushing their kids and stuff like that. So it's kind of one of those, almost like a gigapan shot where you can jump in and see lots of data. I've uploaded this at like 1,900 pixels. So if you really open your browser window up when you're on the website, you'll be able to see a little bit of that detail, but not as much as I can here on my computer screen at 100%. But really, this scene, it's just, it's really nostalgic for me because I must have spent over a year of worth of days in this park as I grew up. And every time I go back, I'll take walks in this park. And I'm kind of proud that the local council or local government never sold it off for development and stuff. It's a huge park. And although it's just lots and lots of playing fields, and it's a very sort of well-used park with people playing the soccer on there and cricket and, like I say, bowls, and then they've got tennis courts and the playgrounds. There's a swimming pool at one end. But I'm really happy that it's still there, and it's a beautiful park. And I guess that kind of leads me into a final word on why I called this episode The Long Journey Home. And as many of you know, I was diagnosed as having a brain tumor in June 2011. And before, those of you that weren't aware of that, drop off your seats. It's all gone now. I was incredibly lucky as it wasn't cancerous, and the dream team of doctors headed by the neurosurgeon Dr. Jorki did everything right, making me 100% now, if not better. And at the time, I'd just given up my old day job and incorporated Martin Bailey Photography KK to start a new life and you know, basically as a full-time photographer. And I could have ended up blind or paralyzed or even worse, dead, but someone must have smiled on me, and I'm still here living out the rest of my life. And as I gazed across at some of the scenery that I've seen and photographed over this last couple of months, and look forward to my Antarctica trip from tomorrow for 6 weeks, I was reminded once again at just how very lucky I am to be here and to have the things that I have and know the people that I know and to do the things that I do. In 2010, of course, I'd renounced my British citizenship and became a Japanese national. And I have to admit that in the previous visits back to the UK since I moved out to Japan way back in 91, it had seemed a little bit of a grotty sort of grey place full of people that our Antipodean friends like to refer to as whinging poms. And for a time, I would have had to agree with them. But on this trip, Britain was alive, and despite the obvious problems with the economy and everything that's not going well in Britain at the moment, everyone was really upbeat. And as I learned, you know, staying calm and carrying on, as they're saying at the moment, with their daily lives seems to really, really be coming across. And maybe it's because I've been away for so long. Or maybe Britain's amazing achievements at the Olympics really lifted everyone's spirits. But for the first time in a long time, I was proud to be able to say that although I'm no longer British, I'm as proud to have been born and raised there as I ever have been. So there are multiple reasons for the long journey home analogy. Firstly, I'd been traveling for almost a month before I got to England, and it would be 46 days before I reached my new home in Japan. But there was also the fact that this was the first time that I'd managed to get back to England after the brain tumor scare. And it was really nice to see so many of my relatives and at least some of my very special friends. And I think that the biggest thing for me was that after not really appreciating how beautiful a place Britain can be for almost 20 years, over 20 years, the new appreciation that I found for the warm people and the beauty of the towns and the architecture and the countryside of my birthplace, I really did feel as though I've finally come full circle, and I felt for the first time in a long time as though I'd been home. Anyway, that's the reason why I called this The Long Journey Home. It feels as though I really have. It's been a long journey. It's been either a year's journey since my tumour. It had been well over a month since I left my home in Japan on this particular trip. And it's been sort of 21 years since I really, really felt an affinity with the country in which I was born and raised. So it kind of has been a long journey home. And so what I want to do, as I said, I've put the images in this podcast into the blog post at mbp.ac/354. So go over and check them out. And obviously, I mean, I have been able to keep stopping this and dropping the images into the enhanced podcast as well. So if you were listening on your iPhone, you could have watched the images if you hadn't already. Hopefully you figured that out beforehand, though. I did want to just mention as well that I am very excited to be able to tell you that I've just finished the details for a new tour that I'm going to be doing in Iceland. And obviously you can come too. The tour is going to be 11 days from August 26th to the 5th of September 2013. That contains a full 9 days of amazing photography. Details can be found at mbp.ac/Iceland, or they're all just linked to my mbpworkshops.com website. So do check that out if you're interested. And note that if you book while I'm away over this next 2 months, you may not get a confirmation email at the latest. It'll be when I get back on the 30th of December. But please don't hold off booking if you want to come, because it will be a first come, first serve basis. There's going to be 14 spaces with two instructors, me and Tim Vollmer, the local expert and amazing photographer over in Iceland. If we should go over the 14 bookings, the additional payments, the additional people that have paid will be given a full refund on December 30th, and you'll be placed on a cancellation list. I doubt that it's going to fill, but you never know. I launched this today, and we've already got one sign up. So I would, if you're thinking of coming, then get that payment in and get your spot reserved. I would just like to quickly, before closing, say that I'm going to be gone now until the end of the year. So it's literally going to be January before I'm back on the air again. I really, really want to impress on you again that I am coming back. Don't unsubscribe. There's going to be more, and I'm going to do multiple episodes per week until we've caught up to the 50 a year that I have this internal commitment to do. So please don't go away. Don't change that dial, as they say. For now, though, thanks very much for listening today. And remember that you can find me on Google+ and Twitter, etc. And links to everything that I'm up to are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next year now with another episode. But in the meantime, you take care and have a great rest of the year, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.